Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another exciting episode of Thriller Podcast. Today, we're talking Swift announcing trial DLT integration with R3. We have Fidelity Bitcoin custody service set for launch in March. And then finally, in our main topic, we're discussing Inside Protocol Polkadot. I know you're probably wondering, what the hell is that car? It's a trust we need for the future of crypto. That's right. All that and more Thriller Podcast starting now.
Welcome to Thriller with Car Gonzalez, broadcasting from Austin, Texas, via Simplecast and supported by listeners like you. It's time for the news. 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 Thriller with Gonzalez.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another exciting episode of Thriller Podcast. My name is Car Gonzalez. Today is January 30th, 2019. Hallelujah, it's almost the end of January. What a cold crypto month it was. Okay, we have a very long show today, so I'm going to get right into the news. This is big. Swift Chief, that's right, Swift, the global banking payments network, has announced that they will trial DLT integration with R3 Corda. That's right, the Corda platform, very similar to what Hyperledger is doing, open source, private blockchain, okay? Speaking on a stage at Paris FinTech Forum this morning, Swift CEO Gottfried Lebrant said, later today we're announcing an integration with R3. In the follow-up announcement, the firm explained that the integration will be a trial that will connect Swift's GPI link gateway with R3 Corda platform to monitor payment flows and support application programming interfaces like APIs, as well as Swift and ISO standards. Okay, now take a listen, because he's actually was on stage with Brad Garlinghouse, that's right, of Ripple, and they go back and forth, and it's pretty hilarious. Take a listen to first the CEO of Swift, Gottfried.
One is, there's two types of competition, I think. The one is between the bank-centric model, and then there's lots of people who are trying to build cross-border payments outside of the bank system. And that's an interesting one to watch, and there you could see a shift in paradigm. I do think that there will, going forward, be a crucial role for banks. There's a reason we have banks, there's a reason they're regulated and all of that. So I don't see the role of banks going away if they innovate fast enough, which they, I think, appear to be doing. So it's the banks to lose. So from that perspective, we are on the same boat of having a bank-centric model. In terms of one of the exciting things about the new GPI platform is the fact that it is extremely interoperable and open, and we've always had links to other networks. We're going to enhance that with API access. We are announcing, I think, later today, a proof of concept with R3 blockchain on trade, where you can initiate a payment on the trade platform and then it goes into GPI. So we're exploring interconnectivity with a lot of things, and banks have always been about that interconnectivity. Right now, you can, I mean, to some extent, you can already do that. If Santander is on Swift as well, so they can act as the peering point between the two new networks. So the last thing we want to be is a closed system. I think the world belongs to open systems going forward, and that's another interesting example is. In a lot of countries, we now see real-time systems emerging, domestic real-time systems, several of them on the Swift network. We in Australia, they went live last year with the Australia New Payment Platform, real-time, domestic, that runs on our rails in Australia. And we are now working with four countries in Southeast Asia to interconnect the real-time systems that they have there using GPI as the glue between them. So essentially, you go from country to country, leveraging both the domestic real-time rails and the cross-border GPI. The other thing that excites me about it is I firmly expect that within a few years, GPI will be de facto real-time cross-border. And the way that works is because now for the first time you can track your payments, we already see that banks are starting to see where the bottlenecks are. So if it doesn't arrive within minutes, they can see what's holding it up. You can also see which banks are still on batch processing and which banks have already, most of the banks have moved to real-time process. So this transparency puts more pressure on the banks to improve their speed. And by the way, it's always good to keep in mind that Swift has never been the bottleneck. We run a telco, a network that transmits the messages in seconds. It's also good to keep in mind that cross-border payments, the $10 that you mentioned, are part of that thing. A Swift message costs 3 cents at the end of the day. So we've always provided a speedy and cheap connectivity. I think what it is about now is to enable the banks to leverage that and really make it work in seconds as well. And I am completely convinced that in a few years you will have the experience over Swift and the banking system to be able to do it end-to-end in a matter of seconds. We will see that evolution thanks to the transparency that the platform provides.
Okay, so this all took place at the Paris FinTech Forum. With that being said, the announcement follows years of speculation about Swift boarding the blockchain bandwagon, which we knew because in November 2018, there was reports indicated that the global banking network was looking for a forge, a partnership with Ripple Labs. Of course, Swift came out and said that was a rumor, clarifying that they are developing an institutional blockchain solution, but it's of their own. Incidentally, Ripple Labs CEO Brad Garlinghouse was there at the event, and CoinDesk reporter asked a question right to the gut at Gottfried. Check this out.
Gottfried, why not use Ripple's technology to do that?
Because, well, we'll have to see. I think what we are seeing, we had a long discussion about blockchain versus API. What we could see is the API technology, which is at the heart of what we do with GPI, is here today, and banks are able to integrate it. Blockchain, we think, is further out. We've run a large proof of concept with blockchain to several proof of concepts, I should say. One of them to put it inside the reconciliation between banks, Nostro Vostro, the account reconciliation between banks. We had 40 banks participate in that. It was the largest Hyperledger implementation outside IBM, really big, 500 bilateral relationships on the blockchain, 500 individual blockchains being run. When we evaluated it with banks, they said, yeah, it works as a proof of concept, but it's not clear to us that it's that much better than what we have today, given the migration cost. And a lot of it is about the banks themselves who have to migrate and be interoperating with that new platform. We find that for them it's much easier to integrate with APIs and what we're now offering them with GPI than it is with blockchain. So that has been our experience so far, and our 10,000 banks worldwide play a big role in that one.
Yeah, it's obvious banks don't want a decentralized blockchain to transact on, right? So with that being said, this is exactly what Andreas talks about when you hear him speak. He always says banks want private. They want their own intranet. They don't want an internet of value. We know this. This is not new, right? So Brad Garlinghouse is on the stage as well, and he just blows the lid. he just can't hold it in any longer, and this is what he says.
Well, I think, you know, the Swift model, we can talk about open APIs, we can talk about open networks,
bigger picture.
It isn't. I mean, Swift is it's a Swift-controlled API, and even, you know, I'm complimentary of what GPI has represented in terms of accelerating what has been, you know, a relatively slow process. GPI, I think, is a big step forward, but it's still there's a central database where you're querying a transaction status, and so that's, you know, a central operator. I think, you know, Gottfried said, and I'd agree with, decentralized systems, I think, over time, as we've seen with things like TCP/IP, are likely to win. And I think that today is not what Swift is. And, you know, when we think about how to enable a transaction from, you know, a Barclays account to an M-Pesa wallet, mobile wallet, you know, that when we think about an internet of value, it's not just about the banks, for sure. Yes, it's about regulated institutions, and we're certainly not trying to circumvent those things. But, you know, I think it is, it's fundamentally kind of a different view of how the world may play out.
Yeah, maybe to that, I mean, a big part of the value proposition of Ripple, I think, is the cryptocurrency, the XRP. Mm-hmm. I think that's another one worthy of debate. There we do find that the banks are also, at least when they talk to us, they may tell you different things, they are hesitant to convert things into a currency, a cryptocurrency right now, because of the volatility in the currencies, because of the fact that you don't have the deep liquidity that you have in, for example, the dollar as a clearing unit at the end of the day. So again, when we engage banks, we don't find them ready for a model where you convert it into crypto and then convert it back. And that has to do with many things, regulation, volatility, and all the things that are being so debated around crypto. But that's a whole separate debate.
It's not really a separate debate, because I think there's two important things about this, and Gottfried mentioned this earlier. SWIFT today is a one-way messaging framework. It actually isn't a liquidity provider, right? It's SWIFT messaging partnered with bank liquidity. When we think about an internet of value, it's a mixture of two-way messaging frameworks, you know, moving to real-time, a chatty protocol, if you will, coupled with real-time liquidity. And I hear people talk about volatility, and I feel like they're propagating misinformation. The volatility risk of fiat, volatility is just a mathematical calculation of time times volatility. If you hold fiat for, let's say, an average SWIFT transaction today is in the order of magnitude 2 days, that's about 180,000 seconds. An XRP transaction is 3 seconds. So if you take a low volatile asset times a long duration fiat, or a high volatility asset versus a very, very short amount of time, it turns out mathematically there's less volatility risk in an XRP transaction than there is in a fiat transaction. The difference is you have market makers. When you do a SWIFT transaction, there's a market maker saying, I'll lock in that rate. I'll take the volatility risk for the next 2 or 3 days. With XRP, you don't have to do that because it settles so quickly.
Interoperability, that's what will happen. I mean, Corda, okay, it's open source. It's a private platform, of course, to their own accord. But you got to realize APIs, right? This is why I always say Bitcoin. It has its own payment rail. It has value. You can transact all over the world. Yes, the speed isn't quite there, but ultimately, Bitcoin, right? We know for a fact, Bitcoin, right? You may have your favorite currencies, but for right now, Bitcoin. In our next piece of news, we have Fidelity. That's right. Bitcoin custody service set for launch in March. Yeah, we covered this in Coin Talk maybe about 2-3 weeks ago. Of course, CoinDesk is right on point too, because they have reports that the first product will be a Bitcoin custody service, and then a second product will be an Ethereum custody service as well. Yeah, this is all bullish news. I know for a fact that this was announced last year, and then no one was talking about it in the beginning of the year because everybody's focused on BACT and ETFs. But now that that's gone, everybody's kind of like, okay, what's next? What's next? And this was always in the back of my head as a radar point. This is one of the main reasons I didn't want to make any predictions yet. I want to wait till March. Then from there, we can kind of go on with the rest of the year. Our next piece of news, we have Gemini. They are setting industry standards out there, because the crypto industry needs more professionalism. That's right. This week, prominent US-based crypto exchange Gemini revealed it had become the first ever cryptocurrency exchange and custodian to successfully complete a system and organization controls for the Type 1 examination. Now, the SOC2 examination was conducted by Big Four auditor Deloitte and Touch LLP and helped cement Gemini's reputation for pushing the envelope for cryptocurrency compliance and regulation and its status as an industry standard setting leader in the crypto space. This is probably where all these Fidelities, NASDAQs will hold their Bitcoin custody products at. Just an idea, speculation. But let's go to the next piece of news. Iran reportedly in talks with 8 countries to use crypto transactions. That's right, because this is a world podcast. We cover every country, not just the US. Iran is reportedly negotiating with 8 countries to carry out financial transactions in cryptocurrency. This is according to their daily newspaper, the Tehran Times. According to an article, Iran has already entered negotiations with Switzerland, South Africa, France, the United Kingdom, Russia, Austria, Germany, and Bosnia, and the countries have reportedly visited Iran to discuss the matter. It was not immediately clear whether the news concerns the national cryptocurrency that Iran is allegedly set to launch in the near future. However, the article notes that the talks on crypto transactions were held in order to circumvent the ongoing U.S. sanctions against the country, which matches with the main stated goal of Iranian coin. You ever get the feeling that chess pieces are being moved around, but you just can't pinpoint where or how? I wonder who controls the SWIFT banking system. And that's all the news we have today. Let's go ahead and jump into interesting video of the day.
Thriller Podcast. Interesting crypto video of the day.
Right. So today's interesting video of the day is actually about the BitTorrent token that happened here recently on Binance. You know, we covered it. We did an Inside Protocol on it about 2 weeks ago. And that's at the time when I let you know that to me, it was nothing more than just a way for Justin Sun and Tron to create another ICO in a bear market. As always, everybody else picked up on this as well, too. And Charles from Box Mining is reporting on exactly how the whole Binance ICO BTT token transpired. Take a listen.
Next up, let's follow up on what's happening with BitTorrent. So this is an ICO that sold out yesterday. And you guys know my opinion on it. I made a live stream about why I think this is a very well-engineered project, to say the least. The reason why it's well-engineered, it's listed on Binance Labs, so it kind of implies that Binance may potentially list it. After all, it's on their own freaking launchpad. Then we have Tron. Tron has a history of market making. And we also have this BitTorrent, which, you know, I guess it has a bigger name out there, name recognition. And that's why I felt like a lot of people would go into this for the wrong reasons. The reason being that they can make a quick flip. And what was the reality? Well, the reality was very similar. If you actually look at the number of people who actually successfully got in, it wasn't that huge. It was 622 for the Tron sale, 340 for the BNB sale, which is less than 1,000 total people got in. And the reason for this was because the website was actually, the Binance Launchpad actually stumbled either by the number of sheer number of people trying to access it or by an intentional attack by some whales or some groups, maybe even insiders who try to attack it. So they are the only ones who get in on this deal and then they can potentially flip it onto the general public. So that's my opinion on it. I think like it's engineered very well in terms of the actual use case. It's actually going to be problematic because BitTorrent is a protocol. So there's a lot of people who definitely use it. And we're actually talking about how there are companies that actually use it. For example, we even have League of Legends, Riot actually used one of their BitTorrent protocols, but they can implement their own version of it. So whether or not the whole community can use BTT and will use a BTT token, that's, you know, very, very speculative at this current point.
Yeah, I'm so glad everybody else picked up on exactly what Justin and Tron were trying to do. I mean, this is one thing that I'm very bullish on is taking a look at white papers, right? Like, doing the technical homework on whatever protocol or whatever utility token that's come to market and really looking at it for what it is and then assessing, you know, kind of a future outlook for it in the whole crypto space right now. It's one of the things I love doing anyway. I might as well record it and provide it to you guys as well too. And ultimately, I'm glad that no one jumped on it. I think it's a bad idea, but y'all already knew that. With that, let's go ahead and jump into Coin Talk. That's right. Let's do it.
It is time. Only crypto, coins, trades, predictions ahead. It is what you spend all day wondering, isn't it? This crypto dream. Only on Coin Talk. Coin Talk. Coin Talk.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Coin Talk, your favorite part of the day, my favorite part of the day as well, too. But before we jump into that, we got a couple things, just a couple things. Thank you very much. So first up, I want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast. I really appreciate you. I appreciate all my patrons out there. You know, I love you so much. And honestly, if it wasn't for y'all, we wouldn't have Thriller Podcast or Thriller X or Thriller Crypto. We wouldn't have any of this stuff. It would all be gone. Just, and it's because of y'all that keeps me going forward. So I appreciate every single one of our patrons. Thank you so much. Thank you, you know, for providing $1, $5, or sometimes even more per month. Really, really appreciate it. And, you know, every cryptocurrency donation I get, every Venmo or PayPal deposit or anything like that, I want y'all to know I really, really appreciate it. And thank you, thank you, thank you so much. And if there's anybody out there who's listening and you would like to donate, by all means, go to thrillerx.com. All the links are on that website. And of course, whatever you do, I don't want you to donate or to contribute to Thriller X if for some reason it's going to cause you some kind of hardship or anything like that. I totally understand. Times are rough, right? Especially in the beginning of the year. We're still recovering from the holidays. So if it's a hardship for you to donate, please don't, you know, save your money for whenever you can. But to all the people that do, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And then also want to say we're going to be doing our giveaway, that's right, of Litecoin. Litecoin on Friday. We're going to be giving away some Litecoin on Friday. So if you want to be entered into that drawing, go ahead and sign up to our Thriller newsletter where we give out crypto every month for free. We don't ask for anything. We just give it out for free, like for free. There's no strings attached. That's the only thing I provide on that newsletter is, you know, how to claim it, stuff like that. It usually requires, you know, sending out a tweet or something and then, you know, posting in the Telegram that tweet and then with your Litecoin address, PM to me. So, yeah, if you want to be a part of that, sign up right now. If you already signed up, then you're good to go. I'm going to go ahead and give you a date and a time. We're going to release that. We're going to go ahead and do that at 7:30 p.m. on Friday. Yeah, nighttime. Okay, so newsletter will be sent out at 7:30 p.m. Friday, Central Standard Time. And then at that time, if you would like to receive that, jump into the Telegram, report on whatever we have you do, which is usually just like a tweet or something, and then you win some Litecoin. There's going to be three people. That's right, three people. Free giveaway. It's all for free. If you're already signed up, good for you. If you're not signed up, go to thrillerx.com to sign up or check the link in our show notes. Yep, that's all we got. That's right, that's all we got. So with that, let's go to jump into our disclaimer. I know, because what I'm going to be talking about in this coin segment that's about to come up is very disclaimery. And I mean that, I don't even think that's a word, disclaimery. No, seriously, it's very disclaimer. This is why I'm putting it inside right now. I'm telling you, it's going to be very disclaimer. So we got to roll the disclaimer.
Remember, Thriller Podcast does not give financial advice. He cannot tell the future, even if he thinks he can. He is just some dude trying to save the world one Satoshi at a time.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time for Coin Talk, my favorite part of the day. I know, and I know it's yours too. You tell me all the time. I appreciate it. I like it. I really do like it. But at the top of the at the top of the segment here, I gotta bring up something. As you know, if you pay attention to our Telegram, or if you're in the Telegram, we're all constantly talking about a lot of different subjects in there, right? Most of the time, I don't bring it up in the podcast just because that's for the Telegram. But this one we've been talking about off and on for a while now, and it's finally crescendoed, and it's about Bitcoin Hex. If you don't know what that is, it's a token that Richard Hart, he is a big cryptocurrency avid fan of Bitcoin and Ethereum, and he has a YouTube channel. Check it out. He actually has a really good take on the whole crypto space. I actually like listening to him. I just think what he's doing right now is completely wrong. And he's creating a token called Bitcoin Hex. And ultimately, what he's trying to do is create an insanely good game theory for a token. And he's basically doing what every other altcoin does, is trying to be better than Bitcoin. And when altcoins do that, they fail every single time. It's one thing to create your own protocol, create your own utility token and do it that way. It's another thing to create your own blockchain project, create your own token and do it that way. But when you create your own Bitcoin, especially with a name in front of it or a name on the side of it or a fork of Bitcoin, and then say it's better than the original Bitcoin, that's destined to fail every single time. I can give you multiple examples, but for the sake of brevity, we'll go ahead and say that's true. So of course I've been hitting him up on Twitter, asking him some questions on this stuff. And just because I love to give everybody a fair shake on whatever they're doing. And of course I want to make sure that I ask him the questions. Of course, in the beginning, he thinks I'm just another Twitter ranter berating him, but I really ask him very simple questions. At a certain point, he says, "Also, while you're journalisming, I'm looking for some other balances. Satoshi, Verg, Garzik, Gian, Bitmain, CSW, Cavanera, thanks. I guess any other token founders would be cool too. Let me know what you get." And so what he does there is just try to incite me to combat him with his own. If you watch his show, you know him to be very combative when it comes to argument's sake, like just to argue, right? And me, I'm like, dude, you're deflecting, right? I'm asking you some serious questions on this because I want to know my audience is asking, right? This is why I want to know. So he just keeps referring to his Bitcoin Hex website, and I'll tell you right away, these are the things that automatically just kind of just pops out as scam or potential loss, stay away kind of red alert crypto coin, right? The very first thing is how to claim. He wants you to install MetaMask, because most of us have, right, at this point. But he wants you to verify your Bitcoin address. And why would I willingly let you know how much of Bitcoin I hold? Like, think about that. Why would somebody want to know how much Bitcoin I hold? There's really no reason for that. And if you're smart, you have multiple Bitcoin addresses that you hold, you know, parts of Bitcoin or whole parts of Bitcoin, or maybe even have an offline wallet, right? But ultimately, why would you want to dox yourself like that? Me personally, I wouldn't. So that's just kind of a red alert right there. Like that, no one's going to do that. I'm not going to do that. Only somebody naive and very dumb would let Richard Hart or his Bitcoin Hex supported claim page or whatever it is going to be, whatever it's going to exist as. It's not up there right now. Know how much Bitcoin I hold. I'm not going to do that. The risk versus reward there is way too much risk for the reward for a Bitcoin Hex. Okay, so that's a red alert one. The second one is he refuses to answer how much, because this is on Ethereum, so it's a smart contract. So he could literally set whatever he wanted. He doesn't have to verify a Bitcoin address, even though he says he does. He doesn't have to, though. He could build that. He could build a set amount that he will receive a Bitcoin Hex built into the smart contract if he wanted to. Second thing, that's another big red alert, because if this ends up going on an exchange, you best believe he's going to dump on you. I mean, who wouldn't? He's put in so much work for this. At this point, if he doesn't dump on you, very disappointing, because this is exactly what he talks about all the time. If you watch his videos, he's always talking about how, you know, it almost seems like he's very, well, I don't want to read too much into it, but I will say he always talks about how these ICOs and these forks always dump on the people that buy in after the hype has gone up, and he's just way too smart not to dump on you. So that's a second thing, right? That's a second thing. If you haven't already got off of the wagon from there, that's a second thing. And third, and this is probably the most crucial one, and this is something that when I start seeing all this stuff, it automatically flags me as something that would be considered a, I don't know, it just feels really shady. So so he's going to have 2x to 30x coins by being early. He's going to reward the holders. He's going to reward the miners. He's going to pay high interest. He's going to do referrals. There's going to be inflation. There's lower fees. There's two, if you're a big whale, you can't claim if you missed a boat, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, a lot of people look at this stuff and say like, oh, that's so good. Like, oh my God, he's doing all this stuff for us and it's awesome. No, he's not. If you're smart and you look at this stuff, he's really doing this stuff for him. Why doesn't he want whales in there? Because he doesn't want them to dump on him. Why doesn't he want hard forks to claim? Because he doesn't want them to dump on him. You know, this is why he wants the addresses of all the well-known Bitcoin godfathers in the space. He wants them removed so they can't claim their Bitcoin hex and dump on Richard Hart. And if I believed he thought that he was doing this in the altruistic way, then I would believe him. But there's no bone in my body right now that believes he's doing this for altruism. He's doing this because he's trying to get crypto filthy rich. And it's fine. I mean, to each their own. But to my audience, I'm going to tell you to stay away from Bitcoin hex because I see this as a red alert scam. And I would seriously, seriously stay away from it. And this is what I'm going to do because I ultimately believe it to be true. And if it wasn't true, I wouldn't report on it. And I'm glad that I got some feedback from him. It was very minimal, but I'm glad he was able to talk about it. And I always thought just hearing him talk and the book that he's written, he was about for making change, good change in the world. And for me, it seems like he's just trying to make good change for himself. All right, I'll step down from my soapbox now. No, seriously, I really do enjoy his content. I mean, Richard, if you're listening, I mean, great work, man. You're very eloquent the way you talk and the way you speak, and you have a very different view on the space, and it's very much needed. So I appreciate you for that. But your coin, no bueno, no bueno, no bueno at all. We got the coin market cap at 115 billion. That's right, billion. And we have Bitcoin at $3,486. We got XRP at 32 cents. Ethereum at $109. EOS at $2.34. Bitcoin Cash at $119. Tether, still doing pretty good at number six because everybody's moved it over. We got Litecoin at $32 and Tron at 2 cents and Stellar at 8 cents. The market's just looking sideways right now for the most part, ladies and gentlemen. We got a 24-hour change. A Booga Googa coin up 23%. XRP up 11% today. And Aurora coin up 7%. Yeah. I mean, am I expecting much to happen here in the short term? Not at all. Not at all. I've told you, I'm waiting to get out of January so fast. Can't wait to get out of January. And then I can't wait to get out of February. And I think we won't start seeing anything shake out until about March. Yeah. But so we goes. All right. Today in our main topic, we're talking Polkadot. That's right. Polkadot. It's a new protocol. And it was all privately funded, Web3 Foundation, all that jazz. We'll get into it. But ultimately, I'm more interested in the technology. The technology looks very good. We got Gavin Wood behind it. He is of Ethereum, as you know, one of the Ethereum 5. But with all of that, let's go ahead and jump into our main topic. Polkadot, starting now.
With the shit, you can tell by how I handle it. So I be killing every fucking map I'm in, I'm back again. Niggas try and block me out, these ladies try and let me in. PA show me love, cause I keystone represent. 18 killing them, with money I'm getting fresher than willing them. Working overtime for a million. And this is hip hop, bitch, you can sit down. Bum when I was younger, but I bet you want me this down. Ballin', inbound, haters to see me shining in they frizz down. But nigga, I'm gon' stunt, blit out, high numbers all digital. Dope rhyme killer with my penthouse minutes flow. So why change up? You said that you was grinding, but you ain't, bruh. You want the same stuff. I'm a high school dropout, hard with the flow. Skateboards and this weed smoke is all that I know. Young rebel sweet, soon to be a superstar. Hard work, hey, get on your job. I'm a high school dropout, hard with the flow. Skateboards and this weed smoke is all that I know. Young rebel sweet, soon to be a superstar. Serious game, so I don't play with it. Whatever you got, my team taking it. School of hard knocks, class of gentlemen, you late for it. So I don't think it's safe to tell you where the graduation is. Seem like everywhere I go, people notice me. I'm performing at the show you left home to see. Now I'm holding cheese, can't go a day without smoking weed. Murder
beats, killing shit first degree. Oh man, they don't wanna start again. Turbulence is crazier than a retarded man. Killing regardless, man. These lames should be ashamed. Walking around like this Sean Carter, man. When I came up, they see I changed up. It's money everywhere, hate, but we remain us. Man, I'm so smooth, new nigga, old school. So recognize I won't lose. I'm a high school dropout, hard with the flow. Skateboards and this weed smoke is all that I know. Young rebel, sweet, soon to be a star. Hard work, hey, get on your job. I'm a high school dropout, hard with the flow. Skateboards and this weed smoke is all that I know. Young rebel, sweet, soon to be a star. Hard work, hey, get on your job. Hey, yo, right from the gate, dog, it shouldn't be no rush. Shining on them other niggas, we just doing us. That's how I was taught. Rhyme sick, shine quick at an island resort. Cause life too short. I'm 18 with a flow, similar to Big and Joe. East Coast niggas hoes, see us and we pick and roll. Yeah, that's the lifestyle. Tim Gray said, fuck it. Look at me right now. I'm a high school dropout, hard with the flow. Skateboards and this weed smoke is all that I know. Young rebel, sweet, soon to be a superstar. Hard work, hey. Get on your job. I'm a high school dropout, hard with the flow. Skateboards and this weed smoke is all that I know. Young rebels, soon to be a superstar. Hard work, hey. Get on your job.
Is an ambitious project that leverages a form of proof-of-stake consensus for the broader ecosystem of blockchains that are connected to it and is scheduled for official launch in Q3 2019. Polkadot allows data structures outside of solely blockchains to connect to the network as parachains. This was originally conceived by Gavin Wood, creator of the Solidity programming language. Polkadot is a heterogeneous multi-chain framework where parachains operate through a trust minimized federation structure. The scalability problems of blockchain networks are well documented, and platforms like Polkadot are striving to become the next generation of networks that foster enhanced scalability and interoperability through expanding the design concepts of public blockchains and centralizing the transfer of data. Take a listen to Gavin Wood as he explains this further.
Polkadot is, in many respects, the biggest bet in this ecosystem against chain maximalism. I don't like chain maximalism in general. I consider it a sort of nationalist equivalent of blockchain. And if I can do something helpful for this ecosystem, I would try to convince people that it's really not such a good plan to be so focused on making on backing one winner above all others. I don't think, even if there were one perfect chain, I don't think it would stay perfect for very long, and I don't think it would be helpful in general for people to try and buttress it. I consider this kind of maximalism basically just barriers to entry, and barriers to entry generally reduce innovation, and they reduce the fun for technologists like me, and I hope for like you too. So, how do they relate to each other? Well, these are separate technologies. They're designed to work together, but really it's more of an optimization that they work together. It's not something fundamental about their design. If you want to think about it in sort of analogies, I can think of Polkadot being more like the Ethernet protocol and Substrate being more like the sort of general IBM PC or Mac or whatever that uses the Ethernet protocol in order to sort of communicate between themselves. Polkadot is a, specific protocol. It's a token. There's a token associated with it that lets you pay for using that protocol. It's got many teams, at least a couple of teams at the moment, and hopefully many more, and multiple implementations. Substrate, on the other hand, is a technology stack. It's created originally by Parity Technologies, although being open source, I hope that we can sort of attract other people to contribute. We already have a few sort of external community contributors. I hope we can get many more over the coming years. And the idea with Substrate is that it's not used for any single network. It's used for many different chains, many different tokens, and in principle could also be re-implemented in other languages. So you can see it's sort of a Venn diagram. On the one hand, you've got like Polkadot and the parachains of Polkadot. They don't need to be written on a Substrate stack, but they can be. We'll make it easy for you to do that, but hopefully there will be other technologies that come along and that allow you to make Polkadot chains without using Substrate. And similarly for Substrate, the chains that you build with Substrate don't need to be used with Polkadot. We make it easy for them to be used with Polkadot, but in principle, they can exist perfectly well on their own. This is a somewhat complex schematic. I don't expect you to understand all of it, but the basic point is that in both the Polkadot protocol and in the Substrate model, you have this notion of a embedded runtime or execute block validation function in the case of Polkadot. And this is meant to be relatively analogous code. They do more or less the same thing. And because of this, we can start to see the sort of the analogous components between both Polkadot and Substrate. So to give an example, both Polkadot and the sort of parachains need both an RPC, they both need database, they both need synchronization algorithms, they both have a WebAssembly execution engine. These are like common components. Why should we be building them twice, once for parachains and once for the relay chain? Doesn't make any sense. So if we go to the model of Polkadot sort of version 1, and this is the thing that I basically laid out in the Polkadot paper, whatever it was, 2 and a bit years ago. The basic idea is that you have the consensus algorithm at the very bottom. That's whatever it is that's, you know, making sure that the chains don't fork off away from each other. You've got the Polkadot runtime environment, which is the thing that sort of actually looks after execution of the block, that sort of knows how to run the transactions, that sort of thing. Then you've got the relay chain's runtime. That's the thing that actually describes what Polkadot is, how it works to the runtime environment. Then you've got the things that run sort of within the runtime, like the parachain consensus, making sure that the parachains are all correctly operating, that they're valid, and so forth. And that's sort of on the relay chain side of things. Then on the parachain side of things, you've got the authoring and the synchronization mechanisms to actually bring forth the new blocks for the parachain to keep getting bigger. And that runs within the parachain. That runs the parachain runtime environment. And then the actual parachain runtime is the thing that decides what it is at the parachain, how it works, how it executes transactions, what the transactions mean, and how it executes blocks. If we go to the version 2 model of Polkadot, then we see, if we go back a couple of slides, we're going to merge the parachain runtime and the Polkadot relay chain runtime into the same bit of code. And when they become the same bit of code, or more importantly, when all of the components around it can interpret them in the same way, then we can put a feedback loop between the parachain runtime and the relay chain runtime. And that feedback loop is super important. It has a very particular thing that it achieves, and it relates specifically to scalability. So if we look at the version 1 of Polkadot, we say how many parachains can Polkadot reasonably handle? It's something along the lines, probably dozens, perhaps 100. If we go to version 2 of Polkadot, where the relay chains can be pluralistic, where each of the parachains can itself be a relay chain, then we can introduce multiple levels of Polkadot. And we end up with something approaching this. So we might have sort of the main relay chain at the top there. But on the first level, there could be other relay chains, copies of that relay chain, or in terms of its operation. And those relay chains can then host their own however many, 100 or whatever, parachains. Some of those parachains might be relay chains as well. Others might be interesting state transition function chains, like maybe a plasma parachain, maybe a Ethereum 2 Shasper parachain, maybe a ZK-SNARKs-based parachain. Who knows? It may be that you get to the bottom and you have a relay chain that's just full of parachains that are all for one specific consortium. So maybe something like an EWF set of chains that all basically run in a zone together.
I think the most important part of understanding Parity Substrate is that it is not part of Polkadot at all. Although Polkadot is built with Substrate, and projects built with Substrate can run natively on Polkadot, you can use Substrate to build new blockchains right now. You don't need to wait for Polkadot to be finished or even for a proof of concept to be released to start working on a blockchain using this framework. Here is Gavin Wood talking about what he is hoping to accomplish with Polkadot and Substrate as technologies in relation to blockchains in this space.
In building Polkadot and in building Substrate, we realize that we will fail in our mission of building a platform that is inclusive if we accidentally come into competition with other next-generation chains. We don't want that to happen. And I believe that the difference between competition and cooperation is pretty much based in the technology, and specifically based in the neutrality and freedom that you get from working on a platform. If a platform gives you the freedom to do what you would do otherwise, but yet some additional advantages, perhaps speedier development, then you're more likely to use it. So we're designing Substrate to have the maximum level of technical freedom, and you also get security and connectivity built in for free, with minimum efforts and constraints, and for that matter, the opinionation that can creep in if you're not careful when you design these platforms. So I want to try and convince you that Substrate is really is a sort of general platform for building your next blockchain on. So why do I think this is a really general platform? Well, firstly, minor things like the block format. We have an abstract block format. As long as your block format sort of encodes the two or three or four specific values, things like parent hash, then you're good. You can put whatever else in that you want. It's extensible. It's agnostic to the underlying crypto databases. You can choose our very Ethereum-like Merkle-Patricia tree. You can have any of the other crypto databases that we write for the various parachains that we want to make. You can introduce your own. That's perfectly fine. And you can organize these dynamically in any way that you want. If you want to have hierarchical trees, then you're perfectly at liberty to do that. It's got an execute block function. Now, in general, blockchains have an execute block function. That's one of the sort of notable constants of blockchains. And we provide a 100% abstract execute block function. You give it data, like a block, and it executes it. It's encoded in WebAssembly, which can be targeted from any one of a number of languages, including C++ and Rust. And I don't think it could be possible to make a more general execute block API. But if you have ideas, let me know. It also has extensible networking and extensible CLI and RPC. So if you want to put in interesting things for managing your networking, maybe managing peer sets, maybe introducing new CLI options, introducing new RPC calls, it's all good. So what about consensus? Well, we also have that generalized as well. There's an API provided. You can sort of roll your own consensus mechanism if you want. We've taken quite a lot of time and iteration to make sure that this API can handle probably most interesting consensus algorithms out there. We also provide a few of our own. Rhododendron, which is our blockchain context of PBFT, is in there. Orand, which you might have heard of if you've been using Coven or any of the sort of parity POA tools, is a probabilistic finality consensus. We also have a few others that we are planning to implement. Ouroboros, proof of work. It's generic enough to bring in the proof of work consensus. And obviously, the ultimate goal for this is to have a parachain consensus whereby any substrate chain that you write can be turned into a parachain. If I've convinced you it's general, then now I need to convince you of its advantages. So what do you get? Well, you get hot swappable pluggable consensus. Yep, you can change your consensus mechanism on the fly. So if you want to start it with Orand, and then you want to add finality down the line with Shaft, that's perfectly fine. You want to switch it from that to become a parachain? Well, we want to make that work as well. It's got a hot upgradable pluggable state transition function. What do I mean by hot upgradable? Well, I mean that you can launch your chain, and then down the line, you can change what it is that your chain does, how it works. It's very internals, without a hard fork. It's got a light client. You just get a light client for free. You want to use it on mobile? You're good. It can work. You get chain synchronization, PubSub RPC, transaction queues, all that sort of general stuff, pervasive and secure networking by virtue of the libp2p protocol. You get a JavaScript implementation, if you like JavaScript, and you get our runtime module library, which lets you take from our library of, I think there's about a dozen modules now, and that's growing all the time, in order to build your perfect runtime. And, of course, you get interchain connectivity by virtue of the Polkadot protocol. So the SRML, which is our runtime module library, and as I say, this is the way that you can sort of take off-the-shelf components, plug them together, and build yourself a blockchain that does what you want it to do. We have a bunch of components already made. The idea is to get each of these audited in turn so that they can be used as common building blocks. And they can have UI sort of analogs as well, so that you can plug in common JavaScript components in order to make really easy, really rapid developed applications. You've got things like accounts and balances so that you can actually use, you know, you can make a cryptocurrency. Who'd have thought that was one of the many use cases. You can use sessions. There's a staking algorithm, so you can use proof of stake. So the way that Substrate works is the consensus algorithms generally just provide a proof of authority, and then you can, by switching out which authorities are looking after the chain, you can turn that into a proof of stake mechanism. We'll probably have a couple of those by the time we get to 1.0. It's got things like treasuries, which is a little bit like the DAO. It's got smart contract module. So if you want to put smart contracts in there, you just include that. It's got various things to do with on-chain governance. At the moment, we have a couple modules for referendums and managing a sort of delegated council. You want to add arbitrary fungible assets, we've got a module for that as well. But as I said, these things are being constantly developed, and we want to turn this into a very reasonably large library. So the problem is that when you're sort of coming up with these platforms, these APIs and protocols, you end up with a kind of a trade-off. On the one end, you've got like minimum effort. Like, I want everything just done for me. I can just like configure it with a JSON file and like choose which bits I want, and that's it, right? All sorted. And then on the other hand, you also want to provide maximum freedom, which is like, well, I really want to do X, Y, and Z, and maybe you didn't think of that when you designed the protocol or you designed the API, so how is it that I can do that? And really, we want to get both. And the way to get both, at least that we're using, is to have a multi-layered architecture. So at the top level there is where you've got like the maximum amount of freedom, but also the maximum amount of effort that you have to put in. And that's for stuff, basically you start with Substrate Core, right? And that gives you a bunch of stuff, but it makes your life of building a blockchain a lot easier than it would be if you started from scratch. But you don't get anything really finally made for you. In the middle there, you've got the runtime module library. So that basically means that you can use Core, add the runtime modules to it, and you end up with something that's much more much easier to get something working and still has a decent amount of freedom. You can make your own runtime modules if you want. You can hack at the code if you want. That's fine. But it is more opinionated. So you have to fall in with the architectural decisions that we made in that library. And finally, there's Node, which is our sort of maximum ease, maximum opinionation. And with that, that's basically kind of on a similar level to the Parity Ethereum client. It's you configure it with a JSON file. It kind of does what you expect. It deploys a blockchain pretty easily.
Governance. Polkadot employs an on-chain governance model that is entirely controlled by the Relay Chain stakeholders. Stakeholders stake the native DAT token and can control everything from direct protocol upgrades to bug fixes. Like other proof-of-stake consensus models, the native token is used for bonding and to incentivize validators to act honestly through having a financial stake in the authenticity of the verification process. Further, parachains connect to Polkadot through bonding and can be removed via withdrawing their stake from the network. Polkadot is currently in its testnet POC2 phase, where testdot were used to upgrade the protocol from the POC1 network and introduce several other features, including using the Rust implementation of libp2p. On-chain governance is a fascinating concept and is not only employed by Polkadot, but many other networks. Take a listen to Vlad Zamir, Gavin Wood, Arthur Brightman, and Adrian Brink talk about governance in relation to the crypto space.
So why do we need governance in these new projects, or in the case of Ethereum, it's like try to bolt on governance after the fact?
Because we're trying to do some crazy shit, and it's really, really like very ambitious. And if we don't govern our efforts, then what's going to happen is we might have unintended consequences that we're going to regret.
Yeah, I think Bitcoin's a pretty decent example. So with Bitcoin, the governance process is essentially status quo. Yeah, it's kind of like the null decision. Let's avoid making decisions. And the issue is that in a changing environment, and Bitcoin exists. There can be both internal and external factors that change, but Bitcoin exists in a time of very changing technology. A lot of development has happened since Bitcoin was launched in this space. And if the processes that that keep Bitcoin together don't adapt to those changing environments, then you will find that the thing that we call Bitcoin splits into lots of things, all sort of half called Bitcoin. It will find it difficult to retain its cohesion. I mean, this is kind of the same thing that happened in the Catholic Church, right, with the schisms in, when was it, like 600, 500 AD? But, you know, in principle, the governance processes failed and it split into multiple different leaderships. And if there isn't a way of resolving those leadership differences in the face of changing circumstances, then that's what will happen.
So I think in general, whenever you have conflicts, the best way to organize things is private property whenever it's possible, because it's scalable and decentralized. However, there are some things that you cannot easily share. And so, for example, in the space of cryptocurrencies, you have the type of algorithm that you use, the type of rules that you're going to have around transaction validation. All of this stuff is shared. And since you have to live with shared parts, you have to live with the other people who are using your ledger, you need some governance rules around that. And I think that everyone has governance, including Bitcoin. The question is, are your governance rules explicit or implicit?
Yeah, and are they legitimate or not? You know, and what are you doing to maintain the legitimacy? And what happens when there's a crisis? How do you deal with new issues that come up that there's not a process for? You know, there's a governance is hard to define because there's always more questions.
So governance creates more questions than answers, maybe. Well,
it has to do with like this big context, this broader context of all of the people involved, and it's not just merely a technical question. And this is, I think, like one of the reasons why I think Bitcoin governance was so difficult, is because they were trying to address the block size issues through technical debate, even though that wasn't really the nature or source of the divergent interest that people have in smaller and bigger blocks.
I think the legitimacy question is really interesting, and that might be that. So I, when I think of governance and the systems, I don't necessarily think of legitimacy, but that's mostly because I don't think that governance can be a source of legitimacy. And by that I mean, you know, if you have a lot of people using a system and they consent to using the system, then whatever role the system is going to use is legitimate by definition. And if the people do not consent to use a system, it does not matter what type of rule you're going to have. You're not going to have any legitimacy to begin with.
Yeah, but with network effects, you don't really get to choose. You know, you don't get to choose that much. You have a small number of choices. You know, so you're like somewhat coerced just by network effects. Like, do you get to choose Twitter and Facebook? I guess you can use Peepit.
So this seems like an argument of using a governance process as a way of kind of generally moving beyond the specific system that you're meant to govern and just generally try to enforce a particular opinion about the world.
I mean, I wouldn't call it enforcing an opinion. I think of it more as like, you know, having the systems that we use like respond to our needs as opposed to being something that we treat as an end in themselves.
Yeah, so I'd agree that a governance system needs to respond to the needs of its users, but I don't think it should respond to the needs of other systems' users.
I mean, yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah, totally. I mean, it would be great if like the Ethereum blockchain did what was good for the Ethereum community and not for like what's good for like some other
everyone else.
Just, you know, like,
Bitcoin.
Yeah,
for example.
You're all thinking it.
Yes.
And that's Inside Protocol, Polkadot. I hope you enjoyed this main topic. It was a lot of fun putting it together. And I really believe in their vision of creating a truly decentralized internet, which serves the true promises of blockchain technology, where independent blockchains exchange information trustlessly, and where the creation and mass adoption of decentralized applications will distribute power and equality for the common good of the world. It's a bold mission. And that's something I can back. With that, let's get on to the end of the show.
tourists come and stare at us. Blow bubbles with their gum, take photographs of fun, have fun. They'll name a city after us, and later say it's all our fault. Then they'll give us a talking to.
So that's the end of the show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Kind of a long one today, long main topic, but so much information in there. And honestly, we didn't even cover half of what Polkadot has to hold. Seriously, we might have to end up doing another part two of this. It was that intense. There's a lot of information that we didn't cover. And just a couple things. We have our LTC giveaway on Friday, so make sure to sign up for that. And then also, buy Bitcoin. Save the world. See you next time.
This is the end of the show.